It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
The final podcast of the 2016-2017 minor league baseball offseason has arrived. Hi. Hi, everyone. Hi. Hi, Sam.
Hello, Tyler. How are you?
Hey, you like that dramatic intro?
That was a very dramatic intro.
Very good.
It might be the second.
And also accurate.
Yeah. Second most dramatic intro we've had in the last 3 weeks, but it's.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, we're going in with a that'll be our new thing for the 2017 season, just being very dramatic in how we talk about these things.
We'll see
right from the off.
How serial we can get exactly. That'll be our goal for each episode. And this one is the 103rd of the Show Before the Show podcast from MILB.com. Hi, everybody. I am Tyler Mond. Sam Dykstra is in New York City, and we are set to roll for the final edition of the show before actual baseball starts. Well, kind of. I guess next week is technically the final edition before baseball starts for the 2017 minor league season. But next week we'll be previewing the season. The season preview episode doesn't really count as an off-season episode. Get out of here with your semantics.
It's also coming out on opening day.
Right, exactly.
So
get out of my mentions,
right,
people.
Yeah. Get out of our mentions before we
get out of our mentions.
Chance to get in there
as we record this a day before it's released. Please.
Yeah, but it was. I was actually thinking on the way I want to call it into the studio, as if this is a studio. No, it's just a conference room. But it was just so nice walking over here because after the whole off season, normally we record this at a time where it's dark. It's been dark for a little bit here on the East Coast. Yeah, it's kind of cold now. It's legitimately warm here in New York. The sun is still out. It's around dinner time. The sun is still out. So there's a lot of reasons to feel optimistic right now as we kind of go into this first segment and into this last podcast of the offseason.
I am one of those people who very highly is jolted by the jump in spring where we get the extra hour of I don't know if we're on daylight savings time now or if we went off of daylight. I don't know when you save the daylight. Presumably it's over the winter and that would
when
put us on standard
forward.
Time
That's the way I
right
think
now
about it.
Yeah, exactly. So but I love that because then it's not dark at 4:15. I don't need to put my sweatpants on as work starts for the night, but I do it anyway. So hey everybody, welcome in to episode number 103. You can find the Show Before the Show podcast at MILB.com/podcast and also on iTunes and the Stitcher app and wherever else you get your podcasts. And while there, you can be so kind as to give us a rating and a review and a subscription. I know that we actually had a review come in that we talked about on one of our episodes, and that fan then last week emailed Benjamin Hill because Ben is going to be visiting the ballpark where that fan attends games. And got in touch with Ben, wants to be a designated eater, wanted Ben to come swing by where he and his friends hang out in the park. It's pretty cool. It's our own little podcast nerd fan community. I love all you people.
Yeah, whether you reach out or not, we're always glad that you listen. But yeah, to have that kind of come through, Ben and I were talking about that after that email came in. Of normally Ben has his, I don't want to say community of followers, but just kind of, the type of people that follow Ben. And to have them now filter through the podcast to get to Ben is kind of a different experience.
Yeah, so, it's weird.
Yeah, so we'll have Ben on today like we do most weeks, and he'll be talking about his trip. So if you hear something about him coming to your hometown or somewhere near you and you want to be a designated eater, reach out to him. Tell him you heard him about it through the podcast. I mean, that makes us feel good. It makes Ben feel good that this is all worthwhile. And we're always glad when you guys reach out, and there's so many different ways to do that. Whether it's through Twitter, one of our Twitter accounts, the email address podcast@milb.com, leaving reviews, any of that type of stuff. We can never get enough of it. So yeah, as the season rolls along, if there's some question you want answered on the podcast, something that happened with your favorite prospect or your favorite farm system, Don't hesitate to reach out. We're glad to always get to those in three strikes or in a foul ball.
And we get kickbacks if you go to Ben and tell him you came for the podcast. He gives us like an extra ration of puns every week. So it's good that way. So let's dive into it on episode number 103. We got a lot coming up for you on the show today. The manager of the AA Hartford Yard Goats and also Team Israel in the 2017 World Baseball Classic, Jerry Weinstein, will join the show coming up in a little bit. Really good conversation with Jerry. If you are a catcher, a young catcher, or a coach of a catcher, or a parent of a catcher, stick around, listen to that interview, because it's a whole lot of fun, and we'll tell you where you can find some of Jerry's best instruction, a guy who is more experienced than a lot of people in baseball put together on the catching side and on the player development side. We'll talk with Jerry coming up here in a little bit. We'll hear from Benjamin Hill on some of his 2017 road trips and more coming up in a little while, but we'll kick things off, as always, with three strikes for episode number 103, and we'll get it started with our prospect primers, which are nearly wrapped up for 2017. I know all of mine have run already. Sam, I think, are yours all done now, too?
No, I actually have the Nationals coming out on Friday.
That'll be the last
one. If you're listening to this on Thursday, then the Nationals are not out yet. They are coming out on Friday. But after that, I think we'll be completely done. Obviously, that makes sense. We've been going alphabetical order, so Washington would be in that last group. But, yeah, tons to pour over in those. That's my last one, and then I'm good.
So get excited. If you're a fan of pretty much everybody early on in the alphabet through the first three quarters or so, your team has already been released for prospect primers. That's how we rolled them out this season. And who stood out to you so far from these, Sam? We have rolled through the majority of the top systems in baseball, the systems that we really like. The Atlanta Braves are out, Chicago White Sox are out, the New York Yankees. What stood out to you so far from primers?
Yeah, there's two that I want to touch on, and one is actually from the Nationals. So if you are listening to this on Thursday, you're a Nationals fan, I'll give you a little taste of a preview. But one thing I always look at in the assignment game is who's getting pushed. You know, it's easy to kind of hold guys back and say, not baby them necessarily, but, you know, to say we want them to succeed. We want to put them in positions to succeed. And, you know, you talk to anybody in player development, they say they want that, but they also want to push them. But I always get a little bit more excited when guys are really aggressively pushed. Somebody like Ozzie Albies last year getting pushed to Double-A Mississippi, being the youngest player there, then even getting pushed even higher to Triple-A. We know, you know, that was a little bit of a speed bump for him, and he went back down to Double-A. But, you know, we found out a lot about the player and that he could succeed that level. He skipped Class A advanced. So two of my primers this year were the Phillies and the Nationals, two clubs I got to visit in spring training. And, you know, there are two guys in those systems, one in each, that really just thrived, put up straight up video game numbers in the Gulf Coast League last year. Now, I know what you're thinking, what I'm thinking. You know, the GCL, it's the lowest of the domestic leagues next to the AZL. It's still on the complex. Not that big of a challenge, but for a lot of guys who aren't, you know, used to playing every day or aren't used to playing stateside, that culture shock, it can provide a test. But what does that mean when they thrive there? Are they going to still be kicked up to, you know, one of the higher short season levels to begin the following season? Or are those clubs really going to push them aggressively and try to test them out over a full season? And, you know, in my talks with both the Phillies and the Nationals, I kind of got the feeling that in the national system, Juan Soto, one of their best prospects, after he hit 361 in the Gulf Coast League last year, he had a 960 OPS. He was the league's MVP. Not a big surprise given the numbers he put up there. Five homers, five steals in 45 games for the GCL Nationals. It seems like he's going to get the push to Class A Hagerstown, which is a lot of fun. He played 51 games between the GCL and Class A short season Auburn. You know, it was six games with Auburn, but he still thrived really well there, going 9 for 21. That's a 429 average in six games. So the fact that they're going to test him there can be really exciting. We get to see just how much that bat plays. He's only 18. He won't turn 19 until October 25th. So that's kind of crazy to think about. This would be his high school senior season. And he's probably going to be tested out in the South Atlantic League. That's really exciting. Over in the Philly system, focusing on an arm there, Sixto Sanchez, another guy, he's not going to be 19 until July 29th, but he put up a 0.50 ERA in 11 starts last year. That was 54 innings in the Gulf Coast League for a Phillies team that was one of the best teams, at least in terms of wins and losses in all of the minors last year. Struck out 44, walked only 8, so he has impressive control. All the reports on his velocity are really exciting. You know, still really young, has a lot to iron out. But after getting time in the instructional league, after putting on some innings and extended spring training, it seems like they think he can be extended out over a full season. And, you know, when he's coming off a year when the stats were just that dominant, what is it going to be like when he's pitching, you know, a road game that's not on the complex, that's in front of fans? What's going to happen when, you know, he's facing a little bit better hitting? You know, he's not going to be able to get along on just velocity. You can sometimes do that at Class A, but it's obviously a different atmosphere than it is the GCL. So, you know, between Sixto Sanchez and Juan Soto, you know, and putting these together, it was a real question for me to ask, are these guys going to be pushed to the full season level? And the fact that they are is really exciting. Now we have to find out whether, you know, that was the right move, or, you know, if that's going to kind of set them back. Based on what they've done so far, it seems like it's the right challenge. You know, it's probably going to help them. If nothing else, it'll humble them a little bit after the successes they found in 2016. But yeah, I'm really excited to see those two at the lowest rung of the full season ladder.
There's a couple of guys that stuck out to me in a similar vein. Corey Ray, the outfielder out of Louisville, who went to the Milwaukee Brewers last year with the 5th overall selection, hasn't been the easiest start to his career. Last year in his debut after the draft, 247, 307, 385 is a slash line, 5 homers, 9 steals in 57 games with Class A Advanced Brevard County. In instructs last year, tore the meniscus in his left knee. That required surgery. And throughout spring training, he's had limited action, but really, really talented player, presumably is going to head back to Class A Advanced. Now, the Milwaukee Brewers are no longer in the Florida State League. Now they're in the Carolina League with the Carolina Mudcats. So a different surrounding for Corey Ray, a guy who seems to have all the tools and the makeup to make a quick climb, but he's been held back so far early on, and that's one of the reasons why we have this category, full season debutant, because for guys coming out of the draft, or even for young international players or players who just haven't made it out of the short season ranks yet, the test is really to go from April to September, be healthy, be productive. That's the first real big notch to put on your belt as a professional baseball player, to jump out of school, get into the short season ranks, carry the momentum of a good college or high school season. That's a good note in a debut season, but to do that for your first full season, that really shows what the track is going to look like for you going forward. So I'll be interested to see what that's like for Corey Ray this year. One of the guys that I'm really intrigued to watch, and I'm not sure if we're going to see him before June, let's say, but a left-handed pitcher in the San Diego Padres organization, Adrian Morahone, who was signed last year as one of the biggest international deals in recent memory, $11 million to him as a 17-year-old. But Morahone, I got a chance to watch him at Padres camp a couple of weeks ago, and watching him throw, it was very intense in that there are, you know, intra-squad games going on. The Texas Rangers had sent over some teams that day. So there are players that are at the AA and AAA levels going against the guys from their equivalent on the other side with the Rangers and, you know, those types of things that happen on backfields. But there was basically a live BP session that a handful of Padres pitchers were going through, and Morahone was the last one to throw with one of those groups. And when he did, just out of nowhere, like 30 scouts materialized. His agent was there, a group of agents from Scott Boris's group that were there with Morahone's agent. Like, the energy that was around him at that time, you could tell everybody in the Padres organization is pretty fired up to have him. He's not that big of a guy, Adrian Morahone, which is really interesting, but he brings a lot to the table. He's only listed. We haven't seen him yet weighed in and put with his official numbers going into a minor league season, but he's listed at 6'1", 165. I think the 6 foot might be a little bit generous, but a guy who can touch 96 with a fastball, really good breaking pitch. The thing that really intrigues me about him, all of his pitches are average, above average to plus, but the pitches that intrigue me, he throws two different changeups. He throws one that's a traditional changeup and one that's been described to me various different ways. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but one member of the Padres organization described it as kind of a knuckle changer, a knuckle curveball. Somebody else described it to me as a palm ball, basically. It's a weird sort of exotic pitch that the Padres haven't really seen anybody throw before. It has wild movement from what I saw the day that he was throwing in camp. But you can tell he is one of those guys, you don't want to put this comp on somebody because of what it carries with it, but he's almost like a Julio Urias in that it's such an exciting young arm, and everybody wants to see what he has, and he's only 18 years old. It's a guy who seems like he could climb quickly because the stuff is so good. The makeup seems to be good. The Padres haven't gotten a chance to see him in games yet, and that's what I'm really excited to see. He left Cuba at the end of 2015, didn't pitch at all competitively last year, obviously, signed with the Padres over the summer. This is going to be the first chance that they get to see him in game action, and the Padres did say in a conversation I had with Sam Gini, their player development director, he said, quote, "I think the plan is to build for short, medium future rather than worrying about April 1, so to speak. From a stuff standpoint and how the delivery is solid, it's a guy who could potentially move fast." So somebody who stands out, I mean, those are the guys who you really like the aura that surrounds them sometimes. You haven't really seen them yet. You don't know what you're going to get from them in a game capacity, but the potential is so strong. Those guys can be really exciting.
Yeah, and they almost have somebody who fit that mold last year, really, in Anderson Espinosa.
Right.
Just that kind of hype. You know, they got him from the Red Sox, but I remember the Red Sox system is kind of the same thing. You know, what is this kid going to be? He could move quickly. Actually, it's funny. After you mentioned Morahone's kind of measurements, I looked up Espinosa's. He's listed at 6'1", 160. Obviously, a right-hander versus a left-hander, which is kind of interesting, but kind of similar builds. What does that mean for these guys? You know, Espinosa went from the GCL to full-season ball, so maybe we'll have to find out what the plan here is, Morahone. I like what you said about going short, medium. Was it short, medium, large, or short, medium, fast?
It was short, medium, future. Rather than worrying about April 1, but that he could potentially move fast because the stuff is so good, the mechanics are so good.
Okay, well, I still wonder what that means in terms of, because like Urias, I still remember when he first made his debut for Great Lakes, that wasn't, you know, an April debut. That came later in the season, and they decided to aggressively push him.
And he was 16 at that point.
Right, so
which is
insane. Yeah, it's not, like you said, it's not an apples to apples. It's not a perfect one for one comparison here, but you know, if they're already planning for him to move quick or see the potential for him to move quick, what does that mean for his assignment once he finally gets it, and what does it mean for innings and all that kind of stuff? So that's going to be fascinating.
So some of the players to keep an eye on out of the early prospect primers, and again, we'll be releasing those through Friday when we'll wrap things up, and then we got some really good stuff coming up next week for opening day content as well, leading you up to Thursday. Strike two this week, Sam. Prospects contending for major league spots. We heard today the Chicago White Sox, actually yesterday, Chicago White Sox Jacob May, who's a prospect that we've heard about for a long time. He has seized the White Sox starting center field job. This is the time of spring where we start figuring out where guys are going to fit in, if they are going to make major league rosters, or if they're going to be figuring things out for the final stages at AAA, et cetera. What do you have your eye on as far as prospects who are competing for big league jobs?
Yeah, so this news actually just came out yesterday. The Reds have announced what their rotation is going to be, and both Amir Garrett and Rookie Davis are going to be in that rotation, which I find really interesting, not in terms of, you know, they're kind of getting a shot, because we don't expect the Reds to be good this year. I don't think the Reds really expect the Reds to be good this year. It's all about testing what they have in the system, you know, pushing these guys, letting them get their experience. And they certainly have openings in the rotation. So, you know, Garrett has looked solid this spring. He certainly earned his way there. But it's fascinating from another point of view in that so many springs in a row, we've talked about service time. You don't expect X to be there on opening day because they're not going to start his clock early. Don't expect Y to be there until June because of Super 2, whatever. The Reds have kind of put that off to the side here. Rookie Davis, I'm not so surprised with that just because he's not a top-tier prospect. Garrett kind of is. He's the number two prospect in that system right now, number 66 overall. No major league experience, has not, you know, pitched in the majors yet. He's been on the 40-man for a couple of years now, but has not gotten that debut yet. Now we know that will come this April. So fascinating that they decided to give both of those guys shots. Garrett should be really interesting. You know, he posted a 2.55 ERA with 132 strikeouts over 144 two-thirds innings last year between Double A Pensacola and Triple A Louisville. You've probably heard his story at this point. Was taken 22nd round, 2011. Was meant to be a basketball guy. Played, you know, at St. John's. Ended up actually transferring to a school in California because he wanted more minutes. The Reds talked him into going baseball full time. Supremely athletic guy, 6'5", 228 pounds. That's what he's listed at right now. You know, was athletic going back to high school and just decided to throw in front of scouts, see what he had. His fastball was hitting the 90s. You know, you're a left-handed pitcher who has the athleticism to be a college basketball player. You have a fastball in the 90s, you're going to get drafted and try to figure that stuff out. So it's been really cool to see him kind of climb his way from being, you know, a part-time two-sport player to a full-time actual prospect and see that work its way into the majors. You know, we'll have to see what kind of happens with him. You know, he is left-handed, that he'll have that going for him. I'm particularly fascinated to see what's going to happen with Rookie Davis. You know, he had a 2.94 ERA and 19 starts last year for Pensacola, but really struggled with Louisville when he was there, posting a 7.50 ERA for them. He came over from the Yankees, to the Reds in the Aroldis Chapman deal. That doesn't look that great right now. You know, it wasn't as big a package because everybody knew Chapman was going to be suspended at the time. So, you know, you weren't going to pay a huge premium on what was 1 year, but Chapman ended up netting the Yankees Gleyber Torres. So the Reds didn't really exactly get full value. At least that's what it feels like. But, you know, if Rookie Davis ends up being a solid three or four starter for the Reds this year, maybe we start talking about that trade in a slightly different light. So, yeah, they're going to throw him in the deep end, see how that kind of goes up along. And, yeah, that Reds rotation, as much as we don't expect it to be great, at least it'll be interesting.
That is going to be a fun team to watch. They're one of those teams that's kind of on, it feels like on the precipice of breaking back into maybe not contention right away, but at least more of a respectability level in that division, which is a really difficult division right now to be contending in anyway. But the Brewers are kind of in that same boat where it seems like we haven't really thought or talked about them for a while. It's been the Cubs, it's been the Cardinals, it's been the Pirates in that division. But now it feels like the Reds and Brewers are really on the upswing again, so that's going to be fun to watch. One of the battles that I think is really interesting that's going down to the wire, and again, I'm going to go back to the San Diego Padres, but Manny Margot and Hunter Renfroe, two guys who we've heard about and seen now at the major league level. It feels like we've heard about them forever. We've seen them have success at the big league level. Hunter Renfroe last year, 11 games, it's all it was, but at the end of the season, he OPS'd 1189, hit four homers of his 13 total hits in his little big league cameo toward the end of the season. But Manny Margot has not had a real dominant spring yet, but the Padres, he's their top prospect, and going into this year, it seemed like would have the inside track toward a starting job. Then he was suffering through some knee issues. Alex Dickerson was ready to come back from a back injury. Now that has kind of flipped. Margot's the healthy one. Dickerson, his back has been giving him trouble again. So does Manny Margot start this season as the Padres center fielder? It would seem like it at this stage. And he's one of those guys who really headlines the way San Diego has rebuilt a farm system that the offseason of 2014 to 2015 decimated with the way they brought in every big name big leaguer, and then that failed spectacularly. The Padres have really gone back to the drawing board and hauled in a ton of talent. I mean, Sam mentioned Anderson Espinosa. He came over from the Red Sox. Manny Margot did the same thing. These are guys who you have to hit on. I mean, these have to be successful transitions in spinning off major league assets to get talent like this back. And for Manuel Margot, if he graduates and makes that jump to start the season, then I think you start getting a look at, okay, this is how we're going to rebuild it and build something consistent going into the future. But, and this is a topic that'll come up, won't come up with the same veracity as of a couple of years ago when we were talking about Chris Bryant in this context, but Manuel Margot, if he spends 24 days in the minor leagues this season, the Padres get another year of team control on his contract. So if he starts the year with a big league club, does he eventually get sent back to AAA to stick around for 3.5 weeks in El Paso and then come back up? One of those things that's always interesting going into the start of a season. And so keep an eye on that if you're a Padres fan or if you're, you know, a Red Sox fan who wants to see how a former prospect from your organization is going to do on the other coast. And that actually leads us pretty well into strike three this week, Sam, which is the last few years we've been treated, it seems like week after week, to the debut of a big-time prospect and guys who have jumped up, made huge impacts. They have stuck at the big league level, and they've turned themselves into stars. From the, you know, guys like Garrett Cole several years ago, Carlos Correa a couple of years ago, Chris Bryant, obviously, and the things that he's been able to do in his major league career so far. This conversation, we're going to eliminate some guys right out of the gate because prospects like Andrew Benintendi and Dansby Swanson and Tyler Glasnow, guys who we know are going to be on major league rosters, if not right on opening day, basically right after opening day. But among prospects that we're not necessarily talking about in that conversation, who do you think is the first one to jump up and stick at the big league level from top prospects across the minors?
Yeah, I don't know. I just keep coming back to, you know, it's fantasy baseball season. And, you know, last week, you know, I did a fantasy sleeper conversation. So I've kind of been in this mindset for the last week of, you know, what prospects are going to come up, who's ready for opening day, that kind of thing. And I keep thinking the way the Dodgers talk about Cody Bellinger and the way everybody talks about Cody Bellinger, I mean, ourselves included, it just seems like he's ripe to be brought up really early. Not that much experience at AAA yet. I think he played what, three games there last year plus the playoffs. But his offensive potential is really good. 26 homers last year, hit 30 the year before in the California League, an 872 OPS last year. So, and I wrote, you know, a tool shed this year about his defensive capabilities, not only at first base, which where a lot of people think he could be a Gold Glover and is the eventual replacement for Adrian Gonzalez, even though Gonzalez is signed for a couple more years. He is capable and athletic enough to play the outfield, which is where the Dodgers are really hurting. I think, you know, Andre Ethier has a herniated disc right now. They're looking at Andrew Tolles in left field, Yasiel Puig in right, Jock Peterson in center. But they're kind of thin. Tolles had a really strong breakout year last year, looked like a major leaguer, helped them out majorly last year. But if he starts to look like, you know, comes crashing down to what we used to think he was, which is closer to a fourth outfielder, you know, these are Dodgers who want to contend, and Bellinger might represent that case. He's had a strong spring, not, you know, putting all my eggs in the spring training basket. He's just always been a really strong offensive performer. If they decide he's ready to handle left field every day, it wouldn't surprise me if he's up by April. And if they bring him up, it's going to be to play every day. It's not going to be their fourth outfielder. So, yeah, there are a couple other names that I kind of bounce back and forth. I talked about Ozzie Albies before. I think, you know, the Braves second base is kind of just a bunch of seat warmers. That includes Brandon Phillips. Whenever Albies proves he's ready, they'll bring him up. J.P. Crawford, yeah, the Phillies will bring him up when he shows he's ready. So a lot of the big names you already know. But among those who have not made a major league debut yet, I keep thinking that the Dodgers are higher on Bellinger than maybe most of these other systems are on their prospects right now.
I'm going to stick on the West Coast as well and bring up a name that I feel like we haven't talked about a lot as of late, but has very quietly put together a really good spring and made a case for himself making the jump to the major league level. Now he's blocked potentially at his current position at the big league level, but Franklin Barreto in the Oakland A's organization is a fantastic player. Last year with Midland, 119 games, batted .281, .344, 13, 10 homers, 50 RBIs, jumped up to Nashville in the PCL for the end of the season there. Really, really impressed at the major league level in spring training this year. Bob Melvin actually made a joke about how good Franklin Barreto had been in camp and said, quote, "I'm the one that asked to send him down, but what do you say? Well, kid, you ate way too much." I mean, that's how good Franklin Barreto has been. There wasn't really anything that you could say to him as to this is what you need to go get better at. But the thing that he will do in the minors is he'll get some work at second base because as of right now, Marcus Semien's ahead of him, Chad Pinder's ahead of him, at least in terms of experience on the organizational ladder of guys who will play shortstop in the big leagues. But among those three guys, he's the best player if he reaches his ceiling. So if he goes down to the AAA level, learns second base, plays that at a high level, I would think at some point the A's are going to find a position for him, especially if he continues to hit the way that he has. And Lord knows, if Frank Libretto is going to do anything, it's hit. That guy has hit everywhere that he's been. And the A's have never been a team that's been scared to challenge young guys at the major league level. And to me, if I'm Billy Beane, if I'm that front office and you're looking for the spark that's going to bring the next wave in a pretty talented system already with a talented starting rotation, Jarrell Cotton's going to make a push this year. The early conversation about him maybe being a Rookie of the Year contender. Sean Manaea, we've had on the podcast before, had a very good debut season last year. I think Frank Libretto can be in that conversation. He made AAA last year at the age of 20, so there's nothing that suggests that the A's will hold him back, even despite the fact that there are guys right now who are getting playing time at shortstop, which is his natural position. Marcus Semien's a great player. Chad Pinder's a very good player. But I think ultimately, Frank Libretto is the guy with the highest ceiling there, so maybe he does get a look.
Yeah, that would be really interesting, because that ace team, I can't crack.
Yeah. We
don't have like a season preview in terms of here's who we predict is going to win each division, that kind of thing. There's tons of MLB content out there. We're going to kind of leave that alone. But in trying to internalize where I think every team is, I don't know if the A's know exactly where they are.
Yeah.
If everything clicks, the Rangers are good. The Astros are good. The Angels are trying to find themselves in that AL West. So maybe there's a way the A's do what it seems like they have always done this last decade is kind of
the Mariners seem like they've been one piece away for the last 10 years.
And Lord knows Jerry DePoto has tried to make enough trades to find that one piece.
Have we been traded?
He's just not sure which one of them it is, but it's got to be one of these guys, right? That's just a fascinating division. Maybe if the A's come out really well and second base, Jed Lowrie doesn't quite play up to snuff, they decide, all right, yeah, we are going to go for it. Franklin, come on up. That would make sense to me. That's fine. Going back to his days before he was even with the A's, when he was with Toronto, he was aggressively pushed. So this just seems to fall in line that he will make his major league debut at some point this season. When that'll be might depend on how good the A's are actually going to be and how good he can kind of tackle the PCL. But for all the reasons Tyler laid out, I think there's plenty of reason to be optimistic about that.
So that's three strikes for this week's edition of the Show Before the Show podcast. Our final one of off-season talk is next week. We'll get you set for 2017 opening day across the minor leagues, which is coming your way on Thursday, April 6th. Get excited. And for the 2017 season in the Eastern League, the Hartford Yard Goats will be piloted by one Jerry Weinstein, a baseball lifer who has coached, managed, worked in player development at basically every possible level and every possible capacity throughout his career. And this year will be back at the managerial level and already got a taste of that in the World Baseball Classic earlier this month. We'll talk with Jerry Weinstein coming up next. Set for opening day in 1 week all across the full season ranks of minor league baseball, and we are going to head to the AA Eastern League and the 2017 manager of the Hartford Yard Goats, a AA affiliate of the Colorado Rockies. Jerry Weinstein joins us to talk a little Yard Goats baseball, but to also talk about a kind of a crazy spring training and off season. And Jerry, we'll start. You've been all over the world lately. Are you cognizant right now of where you are and how far you are from opening day? You've been in Korea, you've been in Japan, you've been everywhere.
Yeah, right now I'm good. I've got my feet on the ground, and actually the travel wasn't that bad. Certainly it was, the whole experience with the WBC was tremendous, but we traveled at night, and so got a little sleep, and really haven't missed too many hours of sleep, and came right back to spring training and got right in the swing of things, and so it's been good in that aspect.
Well, we're 4 years away from getting a chance to talk about the WBC regularly again, so let's talk about this a little bit before we get into your AA season. Manager of Team Israel, a fantastic run for you guys through the opening round, into the second round in Tokyo, run into some really tough teams in Tokyo, but just an unbelievable story for the group of guys that you brought together and piloted to wins over international powerhouses, on the road in a crazy environment in Korea, then you travel over to the Tokyo Dome. I mean, just an unbelievable experience. Now that you've had some time to look back on it, how do you encapsulate that? I mean, I know you've been involved with baseball in terms of the Israeli Baseball Association for a little while and some connections there, but doing it on the WBC stage has got to be different from almost anything else. Just tell us about what that experience was like.
Well, very, very much like I've had a chance to coach two Olympic teams, and it was very similar to that. Probably even on a grander scheme because of, you know, it was all baseball and happening in four different venues and 16 different countries, and the enthusiasm and the energy and the emotion involved in, and the nationalism involved in all those environments, but especially so in Korea and Japan. It was unbelievable, especially when we played Korea in the Sky Dome and then played Tokyo in the Tokyo Dome with 55,000 fans there. It was great experience, and competition was great. The organization was unbelievable. It was like a World Series on steroids because it was happening all over the world. Globally, it was a tremendous event, and MLB did a great job, and it was a, you know, really memorable experience, not just for the players, but our coaching staff and all the people that were involved. It was extremely positive experience.
And if you could just kind of talk about what it was like bringing that team together. I mean, that Israeli team is just such a unique situation in that it's mostly made up of, you know, Jewish American players who, you know, have the potential to have citizenship in Israel. But, you know, this isn't a team that, you know, you could go to Israel and exactly scout for. You have to bring these guys together, you know, from all sorts of levels of major and minor league baseball. You know, how were you guys able to come together as a team, and how were you able to bring them together to find that success that you guys did?
Well, you know, overall it was a difficult and frustrating process because in the qualifier, it was the end of the regular minor league season. We were using all minor league players, and guys were toast at the end of the year, and organizations were reticent to have pitchers play. And so we ended up with a fair number of independent league guys, and then or relief players, or and guys like Jason Marquis who had dusted off his spikes to pitch in the Wichita tournament, and then decided, well, yeah, I might do this, and pitched extremely well for us in the qualifier, and then got fired up about playing again and pitched well again in the WBC. But it was basically, what the people termed it, a team of has-beens and wannabes. We had some veteran players who had big league experience, and then we had a bunch of young players, but the team chemistry was unbelievable from day one. Early on in our mini camp before we started the qualifier, when we just kind of day one, we didn't have a lot of time to introduce one another. We had to get into the workout because we were up in Hudson Valley and only had the field for a limited amount of time. We got finished a little bit early. We sat down in the dugout to, you know, basically, hey, tell us who you are and where you've been. And all of a sudden, you know, an outpouring of emotion, especially from the guys who were on the 2012 team who did not qualify. And they talked about how it haunted them every day for 4 years. And our best players, guys like Marquis and Cody Decker and Nate Fryman. And I mean, I can't name all of them, but they were all in. It was 100% investment. And that day was the day that we cemented our team culture, and it carried over into the WBC. We also went to West Point that day and spoke to their baseball cadets and got a tour of the facilities. And that was another part of that culture building experience. And I, you know, I didn't do anything other than get turned down a lot by a lot of players that especially big league players who had an opportunity to play in the WBC, but just the timing was bad. And then traveling all the way to Asia, you know, with a 16-hour time difference, but it's too bad because they would have had a great experience. And hopefully next time around, then we'll be able to access some big league, active big league players. We didn't have a guy on that team that was on a 40-man roster. They were all in spring training, and we had a couple guys that joined us late in the second round out of the designated pitcher pool, Jared LeKind and Brad Goldberg from the White Sox. But going into it, we didn't have a current big league player or a 40-man player for that matter.
Yeah, that actually transitions well to what I wanted to ask next. I mean, some of these names you mentioned, you know, Jason Marquis, Cody Decker, we've had on the podcast before, Ryan LaVarnway, some people might know from his major league time. But there was definitely some guys that, you know, your normal baseball fan is going to recognize. But out of that next tier of, you know, guys you had on that team, who kind of stood out? Who, you know, among that group, somebody people might not know well, but really shined in that tournament setting?
Well, Scotty Burcham. You don't know who he is. Nobody knows who he is except his folks in the Colorado Rockies. He was a swing infielder for our Sally League team. He really wasn't an everyday player, and he was tremendous in the qualifier, and then again tremendous in the WBC, and it was great for him, great for his career. Now people are starting to take notice because he played short on that team. We had thought that maybe Ty Kelly would play short for us, but it worked out that Ty Kelly, it was a better fit with Ty Kelly at third and Scotty at short, and he got some big hits in games and played flawless defense. And I mean, he had two Sports Center plays during the tournament, top 10, and he's one guy. And then another guy, a young player from the Cleveland Indians organization, Tyler Krieger, second baseman, switch hitter, and he was an A-level player, and he played outstanding as well. And I mean, it was great to see the young guys and the old guys, and the old guys embracing the young guys. And we had a fair number of guys with a significant amount of big league experience, and they were a band of brothers with those young kids, and really looked out for them, took care of them, gave them good advice, mentored them, and it was a very enriching experience for all involved.
Tyler Krieger is a Clemson product who's the 18th ranked prospect in the Indians organization. You mentioned Scotty Burcham, who had the walk-off hit, not the walk-off hit, but the eventual game-winning hit for you guys against Korea in the opening round. And that transitions us well to talk about where you are right now, headed back for the minor league season in the Colorado Rockies organization. You'll be the manager of AA Hartford this year. And I was in Arizona a few weeks ago, got a chance to talk to Zach Wilson, who's the Rockies senior director of player development, about your role in the WBC. And it was really neat to see the way the organization was obviously 1,000% behind you. What did that mean to you? Because a lot of organizations contend with sending players off for different teams, various competitions, that type of stuff. Not many deal with sending a minor league manager away in the middle of spring training. So how did that come about in your discussions with the organization, and what did it mean to you knowing that they were behind you all the way like that?
Well, I was ready to stay in spring training. If they said, hey, we need you in spring training, I said, oh, no. No, you got to go. I said, this, you can't pass up. I mean, the Rockies are the greatest organization around in terms of people, persons, you know, they really look out for their people. And they said, this is too good an experience for you not to go. And we had two Rocky players. We had Troy Nyman, and we had Burcham, and both those guys were fighting for jobs in spring training, and they wanted them to go, wanted them to have that experience over and above what it meant for their career in the Rockies, which, you know, fortunately both of them are doing well, but, you know, they said, you can't not go. And so that, you know, that made me feel good. And then all throughout the tournament, Jeff Reidish, Dick Monfort, Zach Wilson, you know, constantly texting and emailing. And I talked to those guys. And then when I got back, I mean, the facility, you know, just because of where we are on the timeline, you know, guys are in the weight room at 6 a.m. doing no work and watching us play in the WBC and watching Scotty Burcham drive in the winning run against Korea, and guys going nuts in the cafeteria. And I mean, everybody was dialed in, and you know, so when they came back, they were, you know, it was kind of heroic, you know, guys returning. And so from the Rocky standpoint, it, I mean, the support they gave us and the encouragement they gave us, and never disconnected from the organization. They were right on top of it. It was very, very gratifying in that respect.
Well, let's talk about the 2017 season, your 11th season in the Rockies organization, and you're back as a manager for the first time since you were with Class A Advanced Modesto from 2007 to 2011. But you've been in the organization working around the offensive coordinator for a while in 2014, 2015, you were supervisor of player development with Modesto. Last year, special instructor to player development. 2012 and 2013, you were the major league catching coach. So you've done everything just in the Rockies organization. But prior to that, you were the Dodgers director of player development in 2001. I mean, a baseball lifer, I think, doesn't even really describe what it is that your career encapsulates. But Jerry, for you to go back to a managerial role now, I would imagine that still carries its own special level of significance. What was the process for you to go from these different roles in player development the last few years to now coming back to a managerial capacity with Hartford?
Well, I think the real factor was that the organization had a need after Bud was hired, they took a lot of time on putting that big league staff together. And at the end, which was a great thing, they elevated a lot of minor league personnel and coaches. And so they had some vacancies. And Zach asked me, what I'd like to do. I said, well, I'd like to manage. And he says, well, if we needed you, would you manage Double A? I said, sure, I'll do whatever you want me to do, wherever I can help. You know, I'm really indebted to the Rockies. I like to manage. I love the kids. I like the daily grind. I like the challenge of managing young players. And of all the things I've done, that's the thing that I enjoy the most, you know, teaching and coaching and on a daily basis and helping guys, you know, achieve their dreams and get themselves to the big leagues and those types of things. You know, anything I can do in that area, you know, I like, and especially managing, because, you know, you get the quizzes during the day with your preparation, and every night you got an exam, and then you do it 140 times during the year. And at the end of the year, you hope that, you know, each individual player has made progress. We can move players to AAA, or, I mean, six guys from that club played in the big leagues last year, and anything we can do to help the player, you know, create value with the player, improve their skill level, put more tools in their toolkit is very gratifying from an individual level. But certainly, you know, I feel like, you know, it adds to the efficiency and you know, that's what we do as minor leaguers, create value out of our players.
And Tyler went through most of your resume before, but one thing you haven't done has been manage at this level, at this Double A level. What kind of challenges do you kind of see at this level specifically? A lot of people talk about, you know, the jump from high A to Double A is probably the biggest in the minors. I had one person tell me, you know, at Double A, it goes from talking about projection to talking about actual performance on a nightly basis. What kind of challenges do you kind of foresee, you know, trying to tackle this level specifically?
Well, I think in our environment, and we're still with our work groups, we don't have our teams yet, but just in looking at the personnel, that we're going to have a very young team, that a lot of guys that are inexperienced. I think we may have one of the younger teams in all of Double A baseball from the looks of things. And with that being said, you're looking at a lot of obstacles. There's going to be failure and dealing with failure for the first time. I think that is going to be a critical element in how we, the environment we create and how we handle that situation and deal with each individual's player's special needs in that type of environment where maybe they're failing for the first time, and that every night they're seeing better caliber pitching, more consistent play. If some nights it's the men against the boys, and so you need to figure it out and not get too tied into the outcome and make sure you have a good process. So it's no different than every level has its challenges, and you're dealing with, you know, you're dealing with young players and there's going to be labor pains, and you just have to deal with it. And you need to be consistent and on a daily basis relative to the expectations and focus on process and not get too tied into outcome.
All right. Well, the last question for me just has to deal with kind of the unique situation that Hartford was in and what they will be going into this year. You know, last year, obviously the team was on the road the entire year. That doesn't look like it's going to be the case. Obviously this year, it looks like Dunkin' Donuts Park is going to be set for opening day. What do you think it would have been like to take that job last year? And what is it going to be like working with some of those players who are going to, you know, who are probably returning to the Double A level and, you know, are actually going to have a run?
If I had to do that last year, you'd be talking to the executor of my estate. I don't think I could have made it through what those guys made it through. I saw them at the end of the year and they were zombies. They were toast. I don't think I could have done that. And our staff last year was with Darren Everson and Ron Gideon and Dave Burba, and they were unbelievable, and the players went through a lot. But the guys that were there last year that are returning or who will return will be rewarded for their efforts last year, because they're going into a world-class facility You know, very player-friendly environment, great locker rooms, great players' lounge, great video room, great weight room, great facility. It's I mean, for me, I haven't seen a better one in the minor leagues.
I'm talking with Jerry Weinstein, who is the AA manager of the Hartford Yard Goats and the Colorado Rockies organization. Jerry, before we let you go, I want to ask you one more thing. Not a whole lot of minor league coaches or managers or player development people have embraced social media the way you have. There was actually a really cool story that Thomas Harding of MLB.com did back in November, right after the WBC qualifier. You can follow Jerry on Twitter. He is a J1 catching, J-W-O-N catching. And there, Jerry's got, I think, over 20,000 followers now on Twitter, and some really, really cool content in terms of catching fundamentals, videos from MLB.com, videos from YouTube, and just brief snippets of instruction on catching and other stuff fundamentally in baseball. How did that come about for you to embrace that side of the social media game, especially because baseball, in large part, I think the administrative and the coaching side especially, are kind of worried about that. It seems like they don't really get into that so much. So tell me about how that came about for you.
Well, you know, basically I'm a dinosaur. I know nothing about that. But I wrote a book. I wrote a book, and I have a friend, a guy named Alan Jaeger. He's a long toss throwing guru, and he's got a website, and I'm talking to him on the phone about my book, and he said, well, I'm going to write something about your book on my Twitter account. He says, what's your Twitter handle? He says, I don't know what you're talking about. Do you have a website? No. And so he says, oh, you're a dinosaur. He says, I'm going to set you up. I'm going to show you how to do this. About a week, I kind of figured it out, and he helped me how to embed videos and stuff like that. And I was just kind of doing stuff to promote the book and snippets from the book and videos and stuff like that. And I was getting this really very positive response from coaches and teachers and parents and players. And I'd get a lot of positive responses. And so I started posting stuff, not just on catching, but on mindset and on pitching and on base running. You know, I've done this for 58 years, so I got some stupid information, and I just kept throwing it out there, and I got more and more and more followers and more responses. And now anytime I go someplace, I'm not knowing, you know, hey, you coached the Olympic team, or you did this. Oh, you're the guy on Twitter. I said, well, yeah, I guess. So, you know, I throw some couple things up there every day. I put something up there, you know, a drill or a video depicting some type of skill, catching skill or pitching or base running or something. And so now I'm the Twitter guy. I'm not a coach anymore. I'm the Twitter guy. So that's how that happened. It totally by accident. But, you know, for me, you know, I'm about the game, and anything that I can do to help someone become better, I want to do at this point in my career. And I've always felt that way. And, you know, I share information. I try and put as much information in people's file cabinets as possible. And, you know, it's a buffet table. I tell them, I say, hey, you don't need everything off the buffet table. I said, take what you want. If it works for you, great. If it doesn't, no problem. You know, you got to have a filter. And just like players need a filter because they're getting so much information. Same thing for coaches and anybody who's accessing the Twitter account. But that's how it happened. It wasn't by design. I didn't sell any more books. I wasn't trying to sell a lot of books, that's how it happened. And so I'm kind of addicted right now. I feel like every day I got to put something out there.
Well, to be 73 and be known as the Twitter guy is pretty cool. That book, by the way, is the Complete Handbook of Coaching Catchers, which you can find online. It's on Amazon. Jerry's written a bunch of other stuff, Baseball Coaches Survival Guide, a coaching manual for USA Baseball, all kind of stuff. And now this season will not only be known as the Twitter guy, but it'll be known as the manager of the AA Hartford Yard Goats in the Colorado Rockies organization. And again, if you are on Twitter, especially if you're a young catcher or you are a parent of a young catcher or a coach of a young catcher, give Jerry a follow. There's some really awesome stuff that he posts, like you said, pretty much every day at J-W-O-N catching on Twitter. Jerry, we can't thank you enough for the time, and best of luck getting into Hartford, finally getting a home park, and enjoy the start to 2017.
Thanks, guys. Enjoyed talking to you.
Closing in on opening day 2017, and the man behind the business of baseball and how you learn all about it is Benjamin Hill, who is getting set for a jam-packed 2017. Ben, what's going on?
Hey, Tyler. Hey, Sam. I'm doing all right. I was just complaining about how tired I was, but I'm going to try my best to sound energetic and peppy and vivacious.
It was a good start. It was a good start to it, the way you got the deep breath and the hello. I'm behind it.
Yeah, I had to rally myself. It's all uphill from here, too.
It's powered by a lot of Red Bull, or 12 ounces of Red Bull.
I do have Red Bull. On my way to our studio here, I was singing, is it Dolly Parton or her song Maureen? But I changed the lyrics to Taurine, because that's like the main ingredient in Red Bull. That's a true story. I was singing like Taurine.
Is that where they get the name Red Bull from? Like Taurus, Taurine?
Wow, I had never thought of that.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yes.
Hey, at Red Bull, are you called Red Bull because of Taurine?
I'm going to go with yes. I think we just cracked the code. This isn't like a sponsored segment, by the way, either. This is just
very impressive. Soon enough, soon enough, the people at Red Bull
and
will come
with
the
Chipotle
checkbook open.
Twitter, and we have Red Bull in the Ben's Biz segment.
Now we got it all figured out. Well, speaking of which, Benjamin Hill is going to be on the road a lot, and therefore probably drinking a lot of Red Bull in the 2017 season. Ben announced some road trips last week, some stuff that had not yet formally been announced as of last week when we recorded, and some exciting new and fun stuff this week. What's the latest on the road trip front for 2017?
Yeah, I rolled it all out last week into this week. And we talked about some of my trips last week. I'm going to Texas in April, Frisco Rough Riders, Southern California in May, Pioneer League minus Colorado, of course, in June, July, the Northeast, Binghamton Rumble Ponies. You know, they used to be the Mets, now they're the Rumble Ponies. I'm excited to see the Rumble Ponies era. July 29th and 30th, since the Hartford Yard Goats did not open last year in time, I'm going to spend two nights with them, July 29th and 30th, seeing Dunkin' Donuts Park, and it's finally opening. July 31st, the Wilmington Blue Rocks. I've only been there once, and it was 2009, a veritable lifetime ago. August 1st, Frederick Keys. I've never been to Frederick, just one of those oversights. I didn't mean to not go to Frederick, but never worked it in, so I'm going there. And then my old pals, the Red and Fightin' Phils, on August 2nd, because I was able to fit them in, and it's been a while for them as well. Although I have been there in fan mode recently, but not in Ben's Biz mode. Two totally separate entities. So that's a July trip, and then finishing it all up. Boy. In August, I'm heading back down to the Carolinas. I was there last year. I usually don't repeat regions from season to season, but there's two new teams in North Carolina, the Down East Wood Ducks, playing in Kinston at Old Granger Stadium. The Buies Creek Astros, you know, playing in a temporary – not a temporary facility, but they're going to play in Buies Creek for just 2 years before moving to Fayetteville. They are sharing their stadium with the Fighting Campbell – the Campbell University Fighting Campbell.
Not like the soup. The school is like the soup.
Yeah.
The mascot is
Buies Creek Astros are playing in Campbell Field. No, at Jim Perry Stadium, which is home to the Campbell University Fighting Camels. Sam
Camels.
Is literally pointing out my blog post where I write this down. And like
it's like a foul of the bouncing ball.
Yeah, using a pen to point
it's like karaoke
words so I read it correctly. Boy, so anyway, I'm just trying to say I'm going down to the Carolinas. There's these two new teams. I'm also returning to Charleston just because I could fit in the schedule. We'll see how that goes. And August 21st, the National Eclipse. I'm going to be in Columbia because they are the team that will be in the path of totality for the longest amount of time. And I was really excited to fit an Eclipse game into my schedule this year because that's truly a once-in-a-lifetime event, seeing a baseball game with a built-in Eclipse delay. So 5 months of the season, 5 trips, Texas, California, the Pioneer League, the Northeast, and the Carolinas. Read all about it on Ben's Biz blog. I don't even know the name of my own blog anymore. Ben's Biz blog, bensbiz.mlblogs.com. And just yesterday I had a post go up recruiting designated eaters, which I imagine one of you guys, that's a topic you would have segued right into. I'm just going to keep on going right now.
Stop you. Keep going.
As you know, the designated eater, well, as you might know, I was diagnosed with celiac disease in 2012, had to go gluten-free, still obviously wanted to cover food at the ballparks, so I've started recruiting designated eaters. I started doing that in 2013, and it's become a tradition as part of my road trip coverage. So the designated eater is quite simply a fan at each ballpark who consumes the gluten-free cuisine that my diet prohibits. And
Ben, you know what would have been cool?
What would have been cool, Tyler?
If you came to Colorado Springs, I could have done that for you. It's only about an hour's drive away. That would have been cool. Would have been cool.
It would have been cool, but there's always 2018, Tyler.
Yeah. No, I bet there is. Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be great.
You bet there is. You know, you're such a fatalist. I mean, I don't think the world's ending that soon. I think there's
let's not speak too soon.
Yes, I'm sorry, Tyler, and I'm sorry to the state of Colorado because at the
end
of the season,
I bet you are.
As I think I mentioned last week, at the end of the season, the only two teams in all of minor league baseball that I will not have visited are the two in Colorado.
Yeah,
I'm obviously avoiding it because Rocky Mountain Bureau Chief Tyler Maughan is in Colorado.
Cool,
and, you know, I talk to Tyler every week. I don't need to see him as well. But that's back fine. To the topic at hand, Tyler Maughan will not be a designated eater. You can be. Check out the blog for information on how to become one. Basically, you just have to email me and tell me why you want to do it. Check my itinerary. Check the dates that are available. And if you're going to be at that park on that day, get in touch, and I'd love to hear from you. And you can eat the ballpark cuisine that my gluten-free diet prohibits.
You're in Hartford for 2 days, right?
Yeah, I'm in for two, yeah.
Yeah, so if somebody doesn't take one of those 2 days, I will volunteer. I don't want to take a spot away from somebody else who's, like, in the Hartford area and wants to do this and wants to get the shirt and the whole thing and the experience. But if you need two volunteers and you only get one, I'll call the second one.
Well, for the various days on my road trip's itinerary, there's certain ballparks that I'm going to be there for 2 days. And, you know, I'm only going to do the designated eater for 1 day. I don't need to repeat myself. Basically, my goal is to let you both down in one podcast segment. And I succeeded. But, Sam, I would love if you come to Hartford at the time that I'm in Hartford.
We can
team up, and I'm sure I can get you involved in some sort of designated eating.
Yeah, we'll figure that out.
Coverage.
Something that's called Dunkin' Donuts Park. I feel like I need to sample their fare in some way. So in a professional setting would be kind of funny. But, yeah, we'll figure something out. The one thing I wanted to ask about was this trip to Buies Creek. I want to call it Buies for some reason. What do you kind of look for when you're at a place that you know is not going to last? I mean, a lot of these, you know, you're trying to write the definitive piece on what it's like to be at this park. For something like this, you know it's not going to be there for longer than, what, 2 seasons. So what do you kind of look for in something like that?
Well, I mean, I think whether a ballpark is going to be around for 100 years or 1 day, my goal is just to capture the experience on the day I was there. And you're right, I do want to make it definitive, but I don't think it's going to change my approach very much, even though it's going to be there for 2 years. It'll just be, I'll do my best to provide a definitive experience as it was on the day I was there. And it'll serve, you know, as a time capsule for those two brief years that the team played in Buies Creek before moving, you know, hopefully on schedule to Fayetteville in 2019. And that'll give me another reason to go back to the Carolinas. It's a relentless area for ballpark travel. It is very diverse. There's tons of teams in that region. We're going to see, you know, the new ballpark in Fayetteville. Kannapolis could come into the mix with that. So the Carolinas keep drawing me back, and I'm fine with that. It's a beautiful region with beautiful people.
Ben, we are so close to opening day. By the time people hear this, we'll be a week away from opening day, and this is sort of the you're in the cone of silence for a lot of front offices because things are simultaneously kind of their craziest and also falling into the routine of what they'll be for the 2017 season. But what's the mood that you've gotten from front offices around baseball so far is in terms of what the final stages of, like, getting ready for this for full season teams coming up next Thursday?
Yeah, I mean, Tyler, you know it well. I think it's that mix of dread and excitement. You know, there's this sense of, I think a lot of people are feeling overwhelmed. We're seeing that on Twitter, this, like, oh my God, the baseball season is starting. And if you think about any given minor league game and all the things that go into it with the promos and the props for the between inning contests and the launch of balls needing to be numbered individually on the tennis balls and, you know, preparing for opening day, and the players are going to be coming into town, and maybe they need rides from the airport, or maybe the host families, you need some coordination with that, and the pocket schedules are in, and you're running around trying to, you know, promote the season, and X, Y, and Z. I mean, the sponsorships are, for the most part, all sold. The promotion schedules, for the most part, all set. The off-season work is done, and now it's that kind of hectic time when you're like, oh, man, here we go. And I think anyone who works in baseball is feeling a variation of that, and certainly that's the case with minor league baseball teams right now in the front offices. You know, they've essentially done all they can do to prepare for the season in a broad sense. And now it's looking at that schedule, looking at that first homestand, and, you know, looking at a massive to-do list to, you know, to get everything done, have everything you need, and go into the season, hopefully coming across like you've done this before. And, you know, every team has nightmares about, you know, running out of hot dogs on opening day and you know, two long lines at the ticket windows and logistical nightmares. So it's a tense time, but there's a lot of excitement because the off season is a pretty long time and you're preparing for this and you're preparing and it's almost here. And Tyler, you've worked for minor league teams. You know this feeling. I mean, how did you feel?
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, at times I think that I miss it, and then you listing off all that stuff, I'm like, oh yeah, there's a lot of that I don't miss. No, I mean, this is like like I said, it's simultaneously the craziest and also the most normal part of the offseason is, you know, when you work in minor league baseball, you're sort of conditioned to going a million miles an hour for 15 hours a day. So when it's not that, you're almost out of your element from, you know, October through February or thereabouts. But this time of year, one of the best ways that it was ever put to me, my first opening day as the director of broadcasting for the Myrtle Beach Pelicans of the Carolina League, where our head of group sales and kind of the sales guru of everything down there, Guy Schumann, who is one of those people who throughout the minor leagues has as impeccable a reputation and deservedly impeccable a reputation as anybody you'll ever meet. But Guy Schumann said to me one time, this is about 6 o'clock in the morning when a TV crew had come out for a live shot for their morning show. And he said, at this point, it's kind of like a living, breathing creature. It's going to get up, it's going to get on its legs, and it's going to move on, and there's really not anything the rest of us can do to stop it, so we just have to make sure that everything is as good as it can be going forward. And I think that's where everybody sort of falls into the season, is around that concept. When opening day hits, you're off and running, and you just have to control the things that you can control to make sure that it operates as well as it can. Other than that, it's going to happen pretty much regardless. So you have to sort of embrace that mindset at this time of year. But it's a fun time of year because you also get to the point where you're kind of sick of just doing the same offseason stuff. And at least the game days bring you a change in the routine. They bring you some excitement, some fun of being at the ballpark with the lights on and, you know, thousands of people in the house and getting to do all that kind of fun stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like that analogy you said about, you know, this is a creature. It's taking on a life of its own, and teams are hoping that creature is going to be a sleek, seductive puma, but it might be an arthritic rhinoceros.
Yeah, very, very much so. Can very much be the case. But we are not only close on that from a front office standpoint, but also on the site. Of course, we've got our prospect primers, all that kind of stuff. More stuff coming up next week from the on-field side. But Ben, what kind of stuff do you have coming up for opening day?
Yeah, well, I got an article appearing. It'll be on the site by the time you hear this, by the time you hear these words. Recapping the offseason. I feel like during the offseason, I do a lot of recapping, you know, new logo roundups and year-end roundups and on-the-road roundups. And I get a little tired of recapping. This is the final recap. And then after that, maybe I'll do a recap of all my recap articles. But I'm recapping the offseason just so you go into opening day, you know, knowing what's what with everything from player development contracts and the affiliation changes to all the new logos, which I've already covered in detail, but, you know, I provide links, you know, new stadiums, potential new stadiums, X, Y, and Z, all sorts of things going on. And then Sam and I will collaborate on an opening day guide, just saying things to look for on opening day. And of course, we'll have some promo preview / promo review type articles looking at one of the things to look up for in the world of promotions, both in the opening week of the season, as well as perhaps an overview of things to look forward to in the season at large. And then it all begins. And then just like the teams themselves, I can, you know, focus on covering things that I just experienced as opposed to recapping or previewing or what have you, or big overarching perspectives on the industry at large. We're going to the nitty gritty now soon enough.
Well, just to go back to that piece, you and I are going to the annual Sam Dykstra, Ben Hill joint. What's one thing, let's kind of like plant the seed, what's one thing you're going to be looking at on opening day for people to start thinking about now to start, you know, getting ready for in a week's time by the time that they hear this?
Well, it's all sorts of things. You know, from my end, Sam will obviously be covering a lot of the, you know, prospect debuts and the player oriented stuff to look for. And I'll be looking for, you know, just the debut of teams themselves. And the first time you'll see certain logos on the field, from the Florida Fire Frogs to the aforementioned Bowie Creek Astros. Things such as promotions that are starting off right off the bat. you know, there's a lot of opening day weather guarantees. I'm going to monitor those closely. Will it be 50 degrees by the first pitch in Rochester? Only time will tell. Things like that, you know, promotions and giveaways. You know, 160 teams are starting their season. 80 of them are going to be hosting a ball game that day. There's a lot to keep track of that day and every day, and we'll do our best to ease you into it, or maybe just throw you into the deep end and hope you can swim.
That works all the same. All the stuff for Ben's road trips and more you can find at bensbiz.mlblogs.com and also up on the site at milb.com. And you can follow Ben, as always, on Twitter at bensbiz. And last one before the season. Soon we're going to be talking about promo previews and things that have gone all kinds of haywire at minor league facilities. And I'm so excited. Thanks, Ben.
Hey, I'm excited, too. I'm super excited. And in the meantime, I'm going to work on my Red Bull parody of Maureen. Or maybe I'll do it about swimming pools and call it chlorine.
There you go.
There it is.
That could work.
This Thanks, bit's Ben. Just going to keep getting better and better. Just let me keep talking. Or don't.
Thanks, Ben.
All right, you're not going to let me keep talking. Bye.
Jerry Weinstein again on Twitter at JWanCatching. That's W-O-N.
Wait. You think that's JWan? It's JW on, man.
Oh, JW on catching. Oh,
yes.
That makes so much more sense.
Yes.
I thought Juan was like a nickname, like Weinstein. Hey, Wani, something like that. Juan.
No. JW okay.
On catching. That makes so much more sense.
Between that
this
and
like,
the
This is like
the
a scene out
bit?
Of Clueless.
Yeah, I between that like. And the touring bit, I just feel like I'm full of revelations today.
Yeah, man, you're really picking up on the... Jeez Louise, I'm very impressed with your dissection of the language today. Linguist Sam Dykstra.
Yeah,
it's good.
Paying attention to the details. That's
true. I'm not.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Lord knows. Lord knows I'm not. JW on catching. It's not a nickname. It's not J-Wan, which wouldn't make any sense anyway, I guess. But although, to be fair, baseball nicknames generally don't make sense anyway. But JW on catching, Jerry Weinstein. Benjamin Hill. At Ben's Biz, that one I do. He's at Ben's BZ, Ben's Twitter handle. Sam, we have MILB TV games coming up.
Yes,
actual
we do.
Actual baseball people can watch.
Yeah, and they're actually free this weekend. So it's a free preview. If you've ever kind of been on the fence about whether you want to dip your toe in the MILB TV waters, as it were, this weekend you'll get a chance to watch for free, get a taste of the product, see if you like it, see how it works for you. Games almost every day, it seems like, up until, well, except for 2 days. But if you're listening to this on Thursday, there's a game tonight between the Cardinals and Memphis Redbirds at 8 o'clock Eastern. You can watch that for free. March 31st, that's Friday. St. Louis Cardinals also play an exhibition against the Springfield Cardinals. So it sounds like they're going on a barnstorming tour. That'll be at 6 o'clock. Winston-Salem Dash are hosting the Winston-Salem State team on April 3rd. That'll be at 5:30. Sacramento against San Jose and Duke against Durham on April 4th. And Charleston at Myrtle Beach and San Jose at Sacramento on April 5th. So these are all exhibition games. These don't count for anything. But if you want to get a taste of, you know, who's going to be at what affiliate, especially if you're a Cardinals fan or, you know, a fan of any of these teams in those areas or of their major league parent clubs, this is the time to test it out. Again, fully free, nothing you have to pay for yet. But if you want to subscribe for the full season, it's $49.99. Or you can sign up for 1 month at $12.99. Just some things to consider as we enter the 2017 season.
So there you have it, live baseball on your TV/computer/mobile device/what have you for the 2017 season. We will be back next Thursday to get you all set for opening day 2017 across the minor leagues. I'm excited. I know Sam is excited.
Yeah.
You should be excited as well.
I'm very excited. Hopefully if you're listening, that you're excited and we've gotten you excited if you weren't previously. So
exactly.
What'd I literally just knocked over my microphone. I'm so excited.
Goodness gracious. Unbelievable.
I've never been so afraid of like hurting technology for some reason. I don't know why. As if this was like a live podcast and I was going to smack it and destroy the eardrums of all of us.
Oh, no!
But I saved it. I did save it.
Whew, man. I'm pumped. I'm very happy that you did. You can catch all the prospect primers that we talked about at MILB.com. There's also a whole lot of content on the blog, milbprospective.mlblogs.com. There's a lot of extra stuff from prospect primers up there as well. Sam is on Twitter. He's at Sam Dykstra, MILB. I am at Tyler Mon. You can get in touch with the show, podcast@MILB.com. If you have some cheap canopies you want to sell us, those are the emails we get most regularly. And until next week, enjoy the last week of 2017. Without minor league baseball from now until September. Get pumped. We'll talk to you next week.